Good morning, everyone. Hi, my name is Madeleine O'Reilly, and I'm the festival programmer. And I just want to take this opportunity to welcome you to the first ever WOW Festival in Hull, which is fantastic. So thank you so much for coming, getting up early, and joining us for the start of this amazing event. We had such a fantastic evening last night. Was anybody there for last night's event? Yep. Did you enjoy it? Yep. Fantastic. Brilliant. So we've got a jam-packed schedule for you over the next couple of days, but we are going to start with our views from the news, and I'd like to introduce the lovely Rosie Millard, who is going to be chairing this discussion, which will kind of, we'll get a sense of where we are with the news and also maybe the challenges ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Maddie, and good morning, everyone. So, yeah, this is going to be a bit of a review of the news today, with a specific kind of WOW focus. So to help me analyse, dig down and review what's been going on, we've got Madeleine, Sharon Darley, who I'm sure everyone knows, Tish Lamb and Kofi Smiles. So I'd like to kick off with you, Sharon. What's your story that you've picked from today?
Well, it is yesterday's news a little bit, but it was still featured today, and that's the British cycling situation.
Yep.
We get that they're saying it's been a cover-up, that there was actually sexism and bullying going on, and the organisation itself sort of covered that, and now it all came out yesterday, and Jess Varnish said that she was one of the victims to that situation. She was saying that she was relieved that the truth had finally come out, and she's not cycling now. She's... Yeah.
Does anyone else feel that that women get a rum deal in this, or that it's a male conspiracy going on?
So what's happened to the gentlemen involved? Well, the guys involved. What's happened to them? Have they like been stopped from cycling, or have they been punished at all? Because it seems like she's the one that has suffered in twofold, isn't it?
I think it's about the coach.
Right.
It's about an individual's attitude, I think,
right,
in this instance. But the fact is that the organisation itself chose to cover up an individual's personality and approach, I suppose, to the team that he was supposed to be nurturing. And they're saying that the process, the hard drive toward medals has mean all that humanity has been pushed to a side. And is it a process? Is it the process's fault, or is it, you know, he could have been a different sort of personality, couldn't he, completely? And he could have been the best coach in the world, despite the processes and procedures. Is it a personality thing, or is it the procedure, or is it both?
It's all about medals, all about winning.
Yeah. I think it's a genuinely interesting kind of comment about women in sports. I did actually, when we were kind of flipping through the newspapers this morning, look for female sports stories, and I didn't find any.
Can I? 11 pages in The Independent of pure men, and I love men. But there wasn't one woman in 11 pages of sport, and there is women playing sport, we know this.
It's quite a kind of surprising thing to kind of go, you know, you want to look at catch up with what's happening in sports, and it's so male dominated, and it's just that thing of going, well, how are we going to challenge this if it's not there and it's not represented?
Well, the Sports Council does have this Girl Can whole. I don't know if anyone's seen the advertising thing.
Yeah, which is brilliant.
Which is good. Yeah, it's very good. Quite how much effect it's having, I don't know. But thank you. Thank you very much, Sharon. So, Kofi, what story are you going to draw to our attention today?
So I'm pretty sure most of you would have seen the video that went viral yesterday of Professor Robert Kelly. Have you all seen that? Can I see a show of hands? Yeah. So for those of you that haven't...
Show the paper. It's hilarious.
The paper has broken it down into five sets. Basically, Professor Robert Kelly was giving a Skype interview with BBC News, and he was... Well, it depends on how you look at it. I say he was interrupted by his children, and the chaos, but the scene that kind of unfolded afterwards was, you know, was quite interesting. But I think today we're going to talk about... Well, I've got a few points about it.
First of all, the two-year-old comes in going, yay, and then the baby in the walker comes in, and then the mum comes in and drags them out while the father speaks.
And people were question in his action. So I'd like to kind of look at the dad's actions towards the children, the children's body language towards the father, the actions of the mother, the assumption that the woman in the video was the nanny and not the mother, and whether this is funny or not. So the first one is the dad's actions towards the children. Now, when I first saw that, I thought it was a bit like, you know, a bit cringy at first, because he doesn't even look at her, and he just kind of puts his hand to her side, when she bounds in with some confidence. You know, I wish I had the confidence that little girl had. She, like, she strutted into the room, and then he kind of just kind of pushes her to her side and continues to talk, not even acknowledging her, and then she just kind of sits down playing with the toy. But then I think you kind of forget about that, because the speed at which the little boy comes in, especially in the stroller, bouncing off the walls, you know, really with no care, you just kind of forget about that moment. But when you look at it, I think it's a bit, could you have handled that differently? Like, there was a press conference, I don't know if anybody follows the NBA here, there was a basketball player called Stephen Curry, and he was giving a big, big press conference, and his daughter, Miley, she ran up, and she was kind of making a lot of noise, so he just picked her up and sat her on his lap, and he just carried on doing the press conference, and Miley was just sat there playing around, so, and people lost their minds, people thought it was great, what a great father, it's fantastic. But
I think also the thing is this microphone working?
Pardon?
Is this microphone working? Yeah. I think also the thing is that we're so used to having male experts on analytic shows, on the radio and on television. You know, the idea of a professor with his suit and tie on speaking to us is very customary, isn't it? We'd never have someone looking like a father. And the mother's role there, typically, keeping their children away while the father, the expert, speaks. Mm. Seems to me to be a bit of a paradigm.
Yeah.
Mm. Sorry, Rosie. I think there's something else as well in terms of that clip, how the mum seemed to be coming in crouching down. Yeah. As if she can't be visible at all in terms of the filming of that shot, and I thought that was really tantamount to.
I mean, I think
instead of her being, you know, the little girl strolled in, like you said, but the mum had to sort of crouch down.
And she was very
encourage her.
She was very frantic, wasn't she? Like, even when she got the kids out, she was crouched down as if she wanted to try and be out.
Yeah,
short.
I mean, I think if that happened in my, I mean. You know, my husband is fantastic and always looks after the kids while I'm doing stuff. And, you know, he's very. And I think if that had happened in my house, perhaps he would have acted the same way. I don't know. It's sort of human. We're not really meant to take questions, but I know you want to say something. So if you say it loudly, because we haven't got a microphone.
I think I was going to say exactly the same to you, that there could well have been a pre-arrangement. This is the deal. The kids weren't going to.
Yeah. Look here, love. I'm about to go on air.
I really think there should have been an acknowledgement from him, because he never looks away from the camera. Like, there's a moment where he kind of sits there and he's thinking, you don't know what's going through your head, but in the papers people have said desperation, he's just wishing this it didn't happen. I think that it's such an important moment in your kid's life, where whatever, I don't have children, but I know what it's like helping raise my little brother. When they're at that age, you need to give them some sort of response. And one thing I took from this situation was the way that his daughter comes in with such confidence is that she's used to being able to kind of speak to her dad or be around her dad, open arms, bounce around, friendly. It's like there is that relationship there, and I don't know, maybe he should have kind of trust his relationship with his daughter to be a bit like, just one second.
Maybe I think it's a really interesting kind of state of the world that we live in, because I think it's that thing of these kind of very suited experts ignoring their children in a kind of Victorian way, whereas actually, where are we in the world where we're not accepting of people being parents? It's a really interesting thing.
Particularly dads as well.
Yeah, exactly, and actually seeing a dad be a dad. I think it would have been perfectly acceptable for him to have to have grabbed the child on his knee, because, and it's an interesting thing about, like, what world do we want to kind of, what's this kind of paradigm, what's this kind of expertise kind of level, and why can't they be dads as well as being experts? Why do we have to see this front, and are we all trying to be this front as well? And I just wonder whether we're at that stage where we could start challenging that.
It also made hilarious television, didn't it?
It would have been interesting if the expert had been the mum, and the child carer had been the dad, and if she had pushed her child away, there would have, I think there would have been a furore in the newspaper if she had acted like he did. And I don't feel any hatred towards him at all. He was trying to deal with a really full-on situation, wasn't he?
And he was talking about North Korea.
He's a human being, and I don't want to berate him, but if he had been a woman and he had pushed his child away like that, the everyone would have been up in arms.
It's interesting to hear that, Sharon, because a lot of the... I lost a lot of my day because of this video yesterday.
You're preparing for this moment,
preparing for today. I was reading a lot of the comments on various websites which posted the video, whether it was like BuzzFeed, Radio 1, BBC 3, The Mail, whatever. A lot of the arguments always came back to, did you look at the way the mum / nanny dragged out the children? And that is what people were focusing on, which I was like, are you guys kind of missing the whole point of what started this situation? That whole thing could have been avoided if Dad just kind of took 5 to 10 seconds.
If it had been on
like
Bring Your Child to Work Day, it would have been perfect.
Especially if it's work from home. I just thought it was interesting people chose to focus on the mum's actions and kind of resolve the situation when, like you said, Dad was the expert chatting and just kind of ignoring it as if it kind of wasn't his job and that was his only focus. Is it a question of, in my head, a question of kind of how some people kind of define the masculine role these days, where it is kind of job, work, breadwinner, kids kind of come second, where it's like, I think we are slowly seeing that kind of, and I'll have to use the phrase like woke, people that are males that are kind of more aware of like the masculine role isn't more than just kind of drinking beer, hanging out with your mates, you know, being all kind of laddish and stuff. That is kind of, it's dying out a bit, it's dying out more. I've noticed that amongst people.
Thank you. Tish, what's your story you picked today?
Okay, mine's probably a little bit more grimmer than that. In terms of, I picked out in the Mail, and I think it's in other papers as well, that a woman judge, Judge Kusha, warned yesterday after sentencing a man to an imprisonment around rape, but her thoughts were that she begged young women to think twice about getting drunk on nights out because it left them at the mercy of rapists and sex attackers. And I think there's something for me about suddenly why is it the woman's responsibility to make herself safe when actually she should be allowed to go out there and be safe and get drunk and all those things.
This is a sort of, because one thinks about those judgments like, oh, you shouldn't have worn a miniskirt. Yeah. But in this case, the woman who was raped was drunk, paralytic, and she'd been drinking vodka, and I think she'd been taking amyl nitrate.
Yes, it was.
And the judge said, it's like her parallel was saying, you know, if you don't want to be burgled, don't leave your house open at night. You've got to take provision for your own care of your house by locking it, and then you probably won't be burgled. She was using that analogy, and she did, and she sent him down for rape.
Yes,
I mean, he wasn't let off with a custodial thing, or he was given a custodial sentence. He wasn't let off, but she just said, "Look, I really want to say it is prudent not to get paralytic on vodka and amyl nitrate." What do we think? What does the rest of the panel think about that?
I think it's a really tricky one, but there is that thing about, again, the focus being on the victim. Do you know what I mean? And it's, you know, this whole thing of like and breeding a fear.
Well, the focus is on the victim because it went against current thinking of, you know, that rape is rape, and no matter what the provocation is, it is still a criminal offence. That's why it's drawn attention. Because
I mean, it's an interesting one because in her comments, she sort of says that, you know, if a woman is drunk, then they may be more willing or will go along with it to a certain point and then say no too late.
That was in the paper that I've read.
But there's sort of like there's an interesting one of going, well, you know, where do you draw the line and where is the focus? And if we're saying to women, don't get drunk, rather than, you know, men don't rape. Yeah. I don't know, like it's indeed. The fact that this is the message that's coming across. It's still focusing on the victim, you know, it's still the woman's problem.
Sharon, do you think it's sensible advice?
It's really hard because you can often see both sides, can't you? But I think what that sort of statement says is that it's we have to accept that that certain men rape and murder, and it's a norm, and that it does put the emphasis on us. It's not say we're almost saying it's normal, and rape and violence has been with humanity since the dawn of time. Maybe it is normal, I don't know, but there's too much emphasis on the victim stopping the perpetrator rather than...
Yes, although if you are intoxicated, you are vulnerable because you're less physically...
Absolutely. If you unlock if you leave your house unlocked, you're more vulnerable. I understand that.
I think there's something for me, though, about in terms of that I've been hearing those kind of statements for years from male judges.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think it's very interesting that it's been a female judge that has said that. So for me, it's something about that balance of... do I accept it more as a woman because a woman judge has said it, therefore it's more acceptable to say that, than if it's a male judge, I'd automatically be up in arms. Do you know what I mean? So I think there's that dichotomy about that.
I think when you say that, when you're telling women to not get drunk, I feel it enforces this denial of rape culture. Because like there was a lot of incidents that happened last year where it involved a lot of kind of high-profile college sports stars, and a lot of them got off. Yeah. Well, they got off, I say lightly, six months jail time, 3 months or so. But the lesson that a lot of people take from that is that, okay, yes, the guy definitely did rape this girl, he was in the wrong, but she was also drunk, so it was kind of her fault, which kind of diminishes that responsibility and away from the males and the people involved. And I think once people have that in mind, I've got to be careful how I phrase this, but it doesn't seem that much of a crime when the full responsibility isn't on you. Does that make sense? Without being, without making the term reductive. Yeah. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I think when you're putting things like that out there, it doesn't make the issue as serious. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It needs to be an issue where, like, no means no. If you're not getting full consent, then I don't know what goes through some people's heads, but, unless it's 100% from the other person yourself, that is just not a window of opportunity you should be taking.
Does anyone else on the panel have teenage daughters?
No.
No.
But we have been teenage daughters.
I've grown up with three older sisters. So.
Yeah, I mean, one of my daughters is 19 and she was really homesick at university in Newcastle. She's at Newcastle. And then she said, I fell over the other day. And I said, what? And she said, I was a bit pissed. I was like, okay, not that homesick. But But she ended up with a black eye and lacerations because she was basically drunk and fell over. And I said to her, don't get so drunk that you fall over. I was worried for her. She was vulnerable. Does a parent need to say to a daughter, don't get drunk, you will be more vulnerable, more than a son? I mean, I also say to my teenage sons, please don't get drunk and fall over. So...
I find this one a really, really tricky one because it just feels like we're building a fear culture. Do you know what I mean? The more we do warning, the more we kind of go, you shouldn't get drunk, you shouldn't do... It just builds fear. Mm. And therefore, you have a whole generation of people out there who don't... I mean, yes, there are dangers. And yes, we should be aware of those dangers. But it's that building of a fear culture, which... That worries me personally.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't feel like we're creating a better world. It feels like we're actually, we're closing down.
Yeah. So but if you get drunk and fall over and you get run over by a car, that is an avoidable tragedy.
It is an avoidable tragedy. But then I think it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because, we are all human. I'm sure we've all been drunk at some point or others. Some maybe not so much. Not sure, just looking around. Some more than others. But actually being drunk, we do learn lessons. Yeah. I don't think anybody goes out to get drunk to then get themselves run over.
No.
Often,
no.
Those things can happen.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, it's about being aware of ourselves and our own bodies and how much we can drink and things like that. But
Yeah.
Do you think like the recent push in the kind of the public videos that are going out online of what is consent? Because I've noticed... I don't watch that much TV, but anytime it's been on, pardon?
The cup of tea.
Yeah, the cup of tea stuff and the bra and things like that about like the sending nudes and thing. That is coming out a bit more. Do you think it's a bit too late or stuff? The education in what is consent should have started a long time ago. Is it quite surprising that we're only at this point now in 2017?
I think for me that there's an issue that the organisation I work for delivers a lot of that kind of stuff around. We work around sexual exploitation
and
sexual health. Sorry, Corner House.
Thank you. And
we've been talking about that for years to young people. And been talking about it not only to young women, but young men as well. So it's about that building up that relationship between young men and young women and getting them to be able to negotiate stuff as well, I think, which is important. So I think it's for this generation coming forward. So in some sense, it's too late for people that are maybe my age. But for others, I think it's really powerful. And I think young people are really, really responding to it really well.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Right, Madeline, what story have you picked out?
I picked out the Katie Hopkins and Jack Monroe story.
Ooh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Six-figure costs.
Yes, which is an amazing achievement. But the kind of the reading the article about, you know, 18 months of this kind of this hatred basically online between women, and also this setting of an example of, you know, creating even more hate crime. I mean, Jack Monroe's kind of has six ring binders full of like the various death threats and various things that she received because of the followers of Katie Hopkins. And it's those interesting things about, I suppose, responsibility and Twitter, but also how we treat each other online, which I just found really fascinating, and particularly because it's a female to a female.
And women seem to be particularly vulnerable about on this social media. I think, you know, I don't know why, but I think they are. And I think that Twitter and Facebook in particular have got to really, I think they need to outlaw people who go in anonymously. I think, you know, you have to have some sort of, the press have guidelines and obey them usually. I think that the new media needs to follow similar guidelines.
I think, I mean, it's an interesting one, I think, particularly for women, picking up on that point, just because in a sense there's more to threaten women with. Do you know what I mean? In terms of you will be raped, you will be murdered and things like that, whereas comparatively men get a lot of the you will be murdered or we will kill you, you know, all those sort of things. So actually the violence that is threatened is on so many other levels. I mean, I don't know whether you've read John Ronson's You've Been Shamed, but the kind of the different kind of counter on, you know, women being trolled versus men being trolled is really fascinating, just because the amount of abuse that women get, just because in a sense they can be even more inventive with the violence because there are so many examples of it.
Yes, and also if a woman sticks her head above the parapet, they are still perhaps in more of a minority than men. I don't know, although, women commentators are now, there's sort of parity in the press, I would say. Sharon, what do you...
This is a much, maybe a much
bigger...
it's a debate on its own, isn't it? Probably this whole sort of Facebook, social media, world. And I think... the problem is it's a brand new situation for mankind.
Well,
person kind.
Well, this Katie Hopkins, Jack Monroe thing says that Nathan Capone, a disputes lawyer, said the judgment could have far-reaching consequences for well-known Twitter users who use the platform to deliberately court controversy, resulting in more legal actions by people who believe they've been defamed. So this is a landmark case, in effect. Mm-hmm. Kofi, you have, because you're a person in the media, you must have had, I mean, I've had, had the wrath of Twitter fall on my head occasionally, and it's very painful and horrendous. And I've done a lot of blocking and muting.
Because I think, how can you put it, if you deviate from what is a default, which I would class as the white male or the WASC, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, you are a target. So anything that kind of adds on to what that is. And anytime anyone online comes at you with anything, like with this whole face of hull, I had a string of people tweeting me, what was if a white person was asked to be the face of Ghana? And stuff, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. You just don't feed the trolls, because people like this, they're looking to engage. Do you know what I mean? Like, and if you block, so in my head, because if you block them, they've got reaction out of the they know they've got to you. If you reply back to them, you know, they can already, that you've already started a narrative. But I just can't leave them alone. And they just stop, because it's
have
just
they?
Like, carry, yeah. Yeah. I've been nothing for a couple of months now, like, touch wood. But do you know what I mean? But it's going to happen. You know, like, as soon as the internet came about, people, even before, like, people were abusing each other, but it's given people, like you said, this whole ability to be anonymous and to not look into the eyes of someone you're abusing. It's different, because it was I remember a few years ago they brought out a study which showed that bullying, since more kids were getting phones and tablets, was on the increase. Because I remember back in the day, if you were going to insult someone, you were looking at them in their face, and you'd see the reaction when you call someone or you did something to someone, and it would make you feel something. You think, I've actually hurt someone.
It is, but see, the thing is, you are, you know, you're a very positive person. You've got a very good job. You're very well admired in your work. You know, you've got a lot of kind of great things about you to boost you. You're an adult. You know, I don't know if anyone saw the photographs that a father put on the press yesterday of his daughter dying in hospital. She'd taken her life because of online bullying. She was only 16 years old. And he put the photographs of her last moments out in the press so that people could be aware of the severity and the terrible toll of online bullying. And, you know, I think that needs to be, I mean, I think, yeah, I felt for you, but you are a strong person, and you've obviously had capacity and coping mechanisms, which other people perhaps don't have. Yeah. So maybe it's up to the owners of the sites.
Yeah, I think that is important. But I think, like you said, having people around you, because I try not to show it to my parents, because my mum, you know what mum's like. She was like freaking out. Oh my god, how could we do something like this? And I don't want it to kind of, I don't want her to be paranoid, thinking people know who I am, so they might trace who she is. So when I talk to my sisters, my brother, and like friends, it's just like, this is just one person out of X amount of people that might be. Yeah. And that's it's your mentality. And you think, I know how hard it can be, especially at a younger age when you've grown up in this technological environment. Like, my nephew is 11. He used to do live drawings on YouTube, but because he wasn't getting as many followers as his friends who were doing gaming, he was like putting out videos for people, please follow me, I need the followers, because, you know, everyone's laughing at me. And that was causing people to visit his YouTube page, but for the wrong reasons. Yeah. I was like, dude, just keep doing your drawing thing, you know, ignore it. But he's 11, and it's just...
It's very hard.
I think now we're in this reality, and you look on people's Instagram, Facebook, whatever, everybody's living the best lives. Because I think these social media parts, it's all about sharing, you know, and putting out this illusion that, look how great my life is. All these relationships.
My sister's just gone off Facebook because she just said, I've just become dissatisfied with my own life, because everyone's children are perfect, no one ever has an argument.
Yes. And that's it.
Thank you.
It's a farce, isn't it? Really?
Thank you.
Sorry.
Kofi, Tish, Sharon, Maddie, you've been great. Thank you, audience, for listening. Hope that's got your brains going for the morning. And have a wonderful wow day. And thank you for those thoughts. It was very, very, very interesting and really provocative and very good. Thank you.
I wish it was going on forever now.
It's got into a stride. Well, Kofi's show is coming live from outside later on today.
Yeah, we'll be broadcasted from outside of the Maritime Museum, playing a few games.
So if any want to be on air.
Yeah, come and have a chat. Give us your thoughts about today. Tell me what your hot tips are for the wild weekend. So.
Wonderful. Thank you all.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we get a photo on the stage?
Settle at a table for two.